Broadcasting live on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to have you with us today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Now, we've been mentioning the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour coming to the Pantage Theater in Minneapolis-St. Paul this Saturday, April 13th. Also going to be in Chicago on August 17th at the Vic Theater. You can get tickets for that. We've been talking with all the people that have been coming on, and this is a real treat because I've never actually talked to Hal Sparks, and now I get the absolute privilege to talk with Hal Sparks. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about Sexy Liberal and, of course, a few other things. Mr. Sparks, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
My only regrets is our first time talking is virtually. It's almost like we're a throwback to 2020. Yeah. You know, were you better off 4 years ago, trapped in your basement, videoing every loved one you have? Being afraid to go to the grocery store. And riots, by the way. I think Minneapolis would like to have would like a note about that, because I would like to remind everyone within the sound of my voice in the generalized Minneapolis, St. Paul and extended area that less than a year into Donald Trump's first and only term, he scuttled not only the pandemic response team and their findings and all that and just ignored it. He also shut down the COPS program, which is the program that would have broomed bad cops and allowed more flexibility for police forces to get rid of those folks. And wouldn't you know it, like clockwork, 2 years to the day, practically, which is the long game on federal programs at reaching their actual crux point. Wouldn't you know it, we have a giant pandemic and one of the worst examples of police brutality that causes a series of riots that affects the country. Like, it's almost like other people were going, hey, stupid, we fixed this problem for a reason.
Let's douse the country in gas and just hope no one drops a match. You know, that's
right. Yeah, exactly. What is the problem? Gas. We've got liquid gold under our feet. What is the problem if someone wants to set fire to all of it? That's the American way.
This is exciting to chat with you, and I look forward to seeing you when you're in town here on Saturday for Sexy Liberal. You've got a pretty impressive career, television, movies. You've done a lot of these things. For you, yep. One of the things I'd like to get your point is, did you eventually evolve into kind of more political humor, or was it one of those things you've always been that way? Because, like, I started doing traditional radio, and eventually one day it's like, wait a minute, you sent the military troops into a country under false pretenses? Oh, hell to the no. And that was kind of it for me. Was that the same for you?
No, I started doing stand-up when I was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. I was working as a pro, you know, and doing little, like, I could tour as far as I could get and still get back for school the next day if I could drive it, even if the drive took me all the way. I've driven to Minneapolis as a teenager, done a show, turned right around, and drove back to Chicago and went to school the next morning in my life, back when I was a teenager and still going to New Trier. And so, but during that time, my heroes were a mix of influences, Steve Martin being on the silly end of the spectrum, who only literally has one political joke in his entire repertoire, which is, if you're not familiar, it's a physical gag in the movie Roxanne, where he reads a newspaper, he buys a newspaper, reads it, starts screaming, and takes another quarter out and puts it back into the dispenser,
right,
and then walks away whistling. That's his attitude towards political humor in that regard. It's a very talk about putting your flag in the ground on a topic. Meanwhile, though, huge Robin Williams fan, huge fan of George Carlin, Lenny Bruce. I grew up with a very 60s influence pattern as far as stand-up, because my dad got a bunch of comedy records in exchange, because he fixed a couple of mandolins for a friend of his. He does that kind of work.
Okay.
And he fixed the fretboard on them. And in exchange for that, I think it was one mandolin and one banjo. He'll set me straight on that. But the guy couldn't pay him, so he said, I got this crate of records. Would you like it? And it was like, you know, those milk cartons that we all kept our LPs in, which literally defined at one point the choice and size of LPs. That was the thing. Like, everybody will be able to box them in these. We already got the box, right? The cinnamon, right? It was like three of those in a row. It was a genuine long crate of those things. And a third of them were comedy records,
wow,
mostly from the 60s, but there were some from the 50s. He had one of an old tin one with vinyl on the outside of it from the 40s.
Wow.
It was Groucho Marx and vaudeville and that kind of stuff was amazing. But I grew up with those. I didn't grow up with sort of the contemporary stand-ups of the 80s when I was in high school. So I was listening to Lenny Bruce and Godfrey Cambridge and Shelley Berman and Lenny Bruce, or sorry, and Jonathan Winters and, you know, that crowd. And early Carlin, right? And so there was a lot of politics in that. Mort Saul, he had a couple of Mort Saul records in there. Tom Lehrer, which was a mix of, you know, the musical part of it. And so that was always infused that that's part of stand-up. It's why it is a uniquely American art form, quite frankly. It's why we effectively invented it, you know, and why we're, because we were one of the few countries in the world where you were totally allowed to do it, which is at the time. Tell that to Lenny Bruce, but again, I thought he should have gone to jail and he would have been alive now and a hero if he hadn't fought it so hard. But that's another story for another time. But anyways, I won the Funniest Teenager in Chicago contest when I was 17 years old. I also won second place when I was 15. I won in my age category, but I won second overall. And I kept at it because it's a cool interview career. And in my second routine, I had a bit about basically an anti-smoking bit. Effectively, it was about growing up on a tobacco farm in Kentucky and picking tobacco worms like as a summer job off the plants, you know, because they spread disease and God forbid anyone should get sick.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the essence of that joke. And I was 17. I was pretty proud of that one. Right. And I got from Aaron Freeman, who was a comedian in Chicago, political comic known for years, old black gentleman, very funny, a Chicago staple, a classic. He used to have a place called the Clout Club in Chicago, which was a sort of small comedy boutique club that was full of guys smoking cigars. It was like, it was literally like an old pre-burlesque comedy club where men would go to listen to comedy and laugh. Blah, 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 blah. And I was doing Reagan jokes before I was old enough to vote in that place. And I had to get an escort in and out of the building because I wasn't old enough to drink. And, you know, and I never have because of that and myriad of other reasons. But I would go up on stage telling Reagan jokes at 17 years old. And it'd be these guys look like the cover of the Warrant Dirty, Rotten, Filthy, Stinking Rich album, like big bulbous heads and cigars and right. And they'd go, what the hell do you know? You know, like they all had that attitude. And then halfway through my set, like, kid's got a point. That's hilarious. You know, and so but I do make a distinction. And this happened kind of about the same time you're talking about your conversion from what would be run-of-the-mill fun time radio and political around Bush and the Iraq War and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
One thing that my conversion in that time was a shift because I've been naming names my whole political life. If I want to do a joke about Clinton or Reagan or Bush one or any of that stuff, I had no problem dropping them into the joke. But you'll recall after 9/11, there was this, this circle the wagons sort of mentality that people had, that if you attack Bush, you were attacking America. And he used that as cover for a bunch of hinky crap.
Yep.
And it's crucial that people recognize that if you, people will do that. If you go after the broad strokes when you need, you should be specific, or you're specific when you should go for the broad strokes, people will recognize that and use it as a defense against your argument. And so the long and short of it was, I recognized that even if I was making a good point and the audience agreed with me on the politics of it, if I mentioned Bush's name in the bit, even in California, even in, you know, places you'd think were fairly liberal in that regard, there were sections of the audience where their ears would shut. It just wouldn't listen. They wouldn't allow it through because we've been attacked. This is terrible. This is not the time. You know, we got to rally behind this because this was so awful. And I get it. So what I decided to do was name him without naming him. So I started adding around my political jokes a sort of a socio-political take on what was happening. I could make yellow cake jokes and all that kind of stuff without ever mentioning his name. I could make Abu Ghraib related jokes without ever mentioning his name. But what I would do is I would set up a bit in the beginning of the show that let people know exactly who I was talking about without saying his name, which was based on the concept of what I would call an a-hole hat for radio listeners out there, is that if you're a cowboy, if you wear a cowboy hat, you have to have cows. You can't be afraid of cows and wear a cowboy hat. Like, it doesn't work that way. That's an a-hole hat. right? And so, you know, and I would usually use it as a springboard if somebody was wearing a baseball cap, you know, into the club and they're sitting in the audience wearing a hat indoors, which is just, you know, socially unacceptable as far as I'm concerned. And I would go, you know, you're a jerk for wearing a baseball cap indoors at a sit down environment like a comedy club where food is served. And so, I mean, I guess we should all be happy you're not a fan of hockey goalies, because you could be wearing a lot more sports crap that is totally, you know, it like makes no sense in, you know, in the context. I don't know why. I like Pirates too. Why don't I just come in with one of those hats that makes the rain run off your head in three directions? That's a great idea, right? So, point, I would use that as sort of a reference point to get everybody to go, I don't take Bush seriously. And I think he's a liar all the time. And so I could say it without mentioning his name. And it let the people who were off, you know, off the hook, who would just shut down at the mention of the name, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's got value. So in my own stand-up, when I'm not doing sexy liberal, I am entirely socio-political. If I can help it in the concept, for me, the creativity of it is, if I can sell the bit and the idea on its morals, ethics, and its comedic quality, I don't have to name names. And therefore, if another wannabe authoritarian, orange-painted moron who's tricked everyone into thinking he's a billionaire comes along 10 years from now, my bit still works.
By the way, can I ask you, can we do a second segment with you? Because that was brilliant, by the way. I want to give
you
okay, please do. I want to say I like your comedy style. There's one joke you have on Twitter today, which just made me roll. And it's not a joke. It's just a factual thing. But you putting it out makes it a joke that a single Chick-fil-A makes more money in a year than Truth Social did. I thought that was great.
Yeah, Donald Trump would make a better use of his money if he'd had just opened a Chick-fil-A. That's it.
Oh, there wouldn't be any product going out the door. You know that as well as I do.
No, he'd be in the back rubbing the oil on himself as all the illegals he derides shovel food into his mouth.
We've got to take a break, so let's take a break. Of course, Sexy Liberal at the Pantages Theater this weekend. Also coming to Chicago, the Vic Theater. He's heading home for that one. That's coming up in August. Hal Sparks, kind enough to join us today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Thursday. For as long as we're together, I'll be the only
part. The edge.
It's the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. Hal Sparks is kind enough to join us for a second segment here. And by the way, I should mention Richard in Chicago, big fan of yours. I mean, I was just out in Chicago last weekend. Love that town. It's a great town out there. So they're sending their love for you.
Oh, I love Chicago. I have to say, there is a... And it wasn't just like I moved from Kentucky to Chicago, you know, to live with my dad and go to school up there and all that kind of stuff. So it's a huge change in my life from a, you know, one road podunk town to a place like Chicago, where a train ride into the city was $1.25 and was just an environment I'd never experienced at length in my entire existence. But one of the best things about Chicago, if not the single best thing, and it's why we have so much great talent coming out of there, is because of the idea that we have a blue collar attitude towards arts.
Yes.
That if you just work and you show up and you do good stuff, you should succeed. There's nobody walking around looking for magic. There's nobody walking around finding you at the counter at Schwab's and going, "You got moxie, kid. I like the look of you. You got a good chin there. Let me see your eyeballs." You know, checking you like a show horse or a dog at, you know, best of show. You know, and that gave me like a renewed understanding of what the potential for being a comedian as a worthwhile artist, both, and not just in the political sense, because I happen to think pulp laughter is one of the greatest gifts humanity, you know, has come up with that we can give each other. If I can just make you laugh just for the sake of laughing, that helps already. You know, I don't know about it being the best medicine. It might be a good splint once in a while. And I think in my way of thinking, laughter isn't the best medicine, but it is the greatest suppository, if I do say so myself. And that's my ad hill to die on. But Chicago has this thing like where I want to do stand up. Like, okay, this is how it works. You do open mics for free, then you host. Then after you host for a while, you can middle. And then if you middle good enough, you can go middle for somebody out on the road and get some practice elsewhere. And then if you're middle in act, it's 20 minutes. 20 minutes set, you create 3 20-minute sets. That's an hour. You can do that at home. Then you can tour on that hour. I was like, that's a ladder I can climb.
Yeah.
Let's do this. And whereas in LA, it's like, I hope somebody looks at what I'm doing and thinks it's good. I don't know. You know? And so there's a real kind of, industrial attitude towards it, which is a beautiful thing. And it means that it's why some of the hardest working, greatest bands come out of Chicago. It's why it's just lovely, like on all fronts. There, I've said it. That's why I'm gushing.
Well, and here's the deal: is it used to be like that everywhere? I mean, it used to be all the towns in the Midwest used to be like that, where it was it wasn't just a steel mill, wasn't just a flour mill, it wasn't this. You could be an artist, you could do comedy, you could do music, and everyone respected it. And it only seems like Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, St. Paul. There's only a few metros left that still is kind of that standard. But it's so intertwined where it is still there. It's so intertwined with the blue collar culture.
And the culture.
Exactly. You can't miss it. I mean, and you see it everywhere in Chicago. I mean, I love the art everywhere. Everywhere you go is just great art. On any building space, they're putting a mural on it.
Yep.
And that makes it better.
Agreed. And it makes it, integrates the space more. And you can, even if you hate every mural in the place, that's part of the character of the town.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's your part to play in the environment. If you go, God, if I see one more giant smiling local holding some sort of product in their hand that they're like, great. Yes, we get it. Dairy farmers. Understood. Sure. Great. Good. If I see one more of those. Yeah. And that's a great thing. Again, you're just as the joke I used to have about Chicago is that it's a town disguised as a city, and that you could be literally being held up at gunpoint and robbed, and you could go, how about those Cubs, huh? And they go, and the person robbing you go, I know, right? It's just crazy,
That's about the most accurate description of Chicago I've heard. Minneapolis, St. Paul this weekend. Is this your first full tour with Steph and the crew? Or I know you've done a few shows.
No, you've done a few shows. I started this thing. I was the one trying to get John Fugelsang and I were trying to figure out a way to coax Steph out into doing this kind of thing. He and I did a show years ago. We were trying to jumpstart by ourselves called Politics, Sex, and Religion, the Politics, Sex, and Religion Tour, where the two of us would do dueling sets and then Q&A afterwards. And that effectively became the Sexy Liberal Tour. We took that and kind of pitched it like Steph and then famous people come up and during our Q&A thing, it would be great. We could take this out and people need it. And especially around that, the election cycles that we've been through, it was crucial. I always felt that in 2016, we should have been out more. We should have been doing what we're doing this year. And this year, we're leaving nothing on the field, or spending anything in the gym or the locker, I guess, or whatever the analogy is, because sports ball is good fun doing sports things. But go whatever team I am sitting next to the biggest fan of in this environment where we are all eating pretzels. In all seriousness, I feel like you have to stand up for your beliefs in the most forward and charming way you can. When you marched against the Iraq war, marching has found its place. I've been I've walked every AIDS walk in the country, including Minneapolis's, twice, at least. And that's important. But when it comes to changing people's minds specifically about issues and their voting patterns and getting them motivated and stuff, it can't all be gloom and doom. It has to be, look, the whole point of this is gloom and doom that direction. But if you follow us, it's going to be good. And not just good, like we'll all survive. But this is what life is about: laughter, music, fun. That's, we need to get back to that. That's one of the greatest things about Joe Biden, besides the fact that he's managed to pass all the bills they said he couldn't pass.
Yeah.
The record is compared to almost anybody else, it's astounding, including getting us out of Afghanistan after 21 friggin' years, is the fact that he's wonderfully made politics slightly boring again from his perspective. He's just going back to all the normal, you know, Easter egg rolls and state dinners and all that kind of stuff and standard movements and trying to lower the cost of prescription drugs, all the stuff you want your president to do, and none of the crap where they just eat up your bandwidth with their nonsense all the time. And in the case of Trump, that's really what I think a lot of people are going to be looking forward to getting past, because this is Donald Trump's last election.
Yes.
Okay. He's not running again, and he's not going to win. Let me tell you that he is not going to win. The only difference is if people are on our side of the aisle and independents who lean one way or another, if they're able to convince Republicans to stop messing around with this far right garbage and try to come to the table with real beliefs again.
Yeah.
If we don't stomp that nonsense into a mud hole and march it dry, they're going to go, well, maybe we just weren't anti-woman enough. Maybe we weren't anti-immigrant enough. We were just too quiet about it.
Well, again, we have to. You're the easiest interview I've ever done. Well, Schechter's pretty good too.
Yeah, sure.
The guys are fantastic. You want more of this? He's exactly right. You want to be you want to be with people that basically are on your side. You want to go to Sexy Liberal this Saturday, the Pantages Theater. Hal Sparks, part of that crew. Hal, as a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. See you this weekend.
See you this weekend. We'll take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show.